for knowledge beyond dreams. Discover That's the Way Love Goes, a collection of short stories by Mark Marcus. Go to thatsthewaylovegoes.net and let the dreams begin.
After the attacks of 9/11, the CIA sought and was granted unprecedented authority to capture al-Qaeda suspects, whisk them off to secret sites, and interrogate them with harsh techniques, including waterboarding. The man who ran the interrogation program was Jose Rodriguez, a CIA spy in Latin America, who rose to become head of the clandestine service, the CIA's dark side. When the agency's secret program was revealed, it was widely criticized. But the blunt-spoken, Puerto Rican-born Rodriguez is fighting back. He's written a book, a defense of the interrogations, called Hard Measures. And tonight, you will hear his side of the story. It's the first time someone this close to the program, this accountable, has gone public, explaining why techniques that had long been condemned by the U.S. as torture were employed.
For the first time in our history, we had an enemy come into our homeland and kill 3,000 people. I mean, that was a huge deal. People jumping from the towers to their death, the people running away from the cloud of dust, terrified out of their mind. This was a threat, and we had to throw everything at it.
Which is why Jose Rodriguez says that when he ran the CIA's counterterrorist center, he came up with the idea of employing harsh interrogation techniques. And 10 years later, he feels he still has to justify their use.
You had no qualms. We used to consider some of them war crimes.
We made some al-Qaeda terrorists with American blood on their hands uncomfortable for a few days. But we did the right thing for the right reason. And the right reason was to protect the homeland and to protect American lives. So, yes, I had no qualms.
Rodriguez spent 31 years in the CIA's clandestine service, where spies are revered as fighter jocks. He rose through the ranks, eventually running covert operations as head of the Latin America division. When al-Qaeda struck on 9/11, he had had no experience in counterterrorism or the Middle East. But he wanted in on the war on terror and went to the CIA's counterterrorist center, where the main objective was to stop another attack on the U.S. homeland.
We were flooded with intelligence about an imminent attack, that al-Qaeda had an anthrax program, and that they were planning to use it against us, and that they were seeking nuclear materials to use in some type of nuclear weapon. So we were facing a ticking time bomb situation, and we were very concerned.
So you were getting pressure from Congress and the White House to take the gloves off. Did you go to the dark side?
Well, the dark side, that's what we do.
You are the dark side.
We are the dark side, yes.
His first big operation came after the capture of a Palestinian, thought then to have high-level al-Qaeda connections, named Abu Zubaydah. When he was taken prisoner in Pakistan in the spring of 2002, Abu Zubaydah was badly injured in a firefight.
He actually was on the verge of dying. I mean, we brought in a surgeon from the U.S. To help him out.
You brought in a top-rate surgeon.
Yes,
from Johns Hopkins.
Yes, the best that we could find.
You save him so you can squeeze everything out of his brain that you can.
So we could elicit intelligence that would allow us to keep our country safe. So we took him to a black site.
Black Site. It was the first of several secret interrogation centers around the world. Abu Zubaydah was still recovering from his gunshot wounds when the interrogation began.
When you start the interrogation, it's both the CIA and the FBI, right?
Correct. This was our prisoner, our site.
Meaning CIA?
Our show, CIA. Yeah. But we had invited the FBI to come along.
Now there's a big dispute over which agency got more information and more valuable information. At first, FBI interrogators used their standard interviewing techniques with no coercion, and Abu Zubaydah cooperated, giving tips and leads. But
after he regains his strength, He stopped talking.
And then he just shuts down? Is that what happened?
He shuts down.
But the FBI's lead interrogator says he didn't shut down. And he argued at the time that they should continue with the FBI's traditional methods of questioning. Rodriguez, though, heard the ticking time bomb and felt a sense of urgency.
If there was going to be another attack against the U.S., we would have blood in our hands because we would not have been able to extract that information from him. So we started to talk about an alternative set of interrogation procedures.
So you're the one who went looking for something to break this guy.
Yes, and let me tell you something, you know, because years later, the 9/11 Commission accused or said that 9/11 was a failure of imagination. Well, there was no lack of imagination on the part of the CIA in June 2002. We were looking for different ways of doing this.
His search led him to a former military psychologist who had helped train American soldiers in how to resist torture if they were captured. The psychologist adapted the brutal tactics of our Cold War adversaries into what the CIA called enhanced interrogation techniques. A team of interrogators, about six of them, was given a two-week training course. And while Rodriguez himself never engaged in any of the sessions with detainees, he supervised the program.
Did the psychologist, did he tell you how long it was going to take, if you use these techniques, to break Abu Zubaydah and anybody else that you might capture?
You know, he had speculated that within 30 days we would probably be able to get the information that we wanted, yes.
But before moving forward, Rodriguez got his superiors right up to the president to sign off on a set of those techniques, including waterboarding.
We needed to get everybody in government to put their big boy pants on and provide the authorities that we needed.
Their big boy pants on?
Big boy pants. Let me tell you, I had had a lot of experience in the agency where we had been left to hold the bag, and I was not about to let that happen for the people that work for me.
There wasn't going to be any deniability on this one.
There was not going to be any deniability. And I tell you something, in August of 2002, I felt I had all the authorities that I needed, all the approvals that I needed. The atmosphere in the country was different. Everybody wanted us to save American lives.
The authorities came from the Justice Department in an opinion, later dubbed one of the torture memos, that detailed what was permissible.
We went to the border of legality. We went to the border that was within legal bounds.
Even after you got the Justice Department legal office to give you this okay, you kept going back and back with each thing you did, over and over.
We wanted to make sure that the rest of government was with us.
How does the waterboarding that you engaged in, how did that work?
The detainee was strapped to an inclined board with his feet up so that no water would go.
His head was back.
So his head was back. And a cloth was placed over the mouth and the nose. And water was applied
We couldn't breathe through his nose.
So when he was saturated, then the air flow would be stopped.
And he'd have the sensation of drowning.
And he would have the sensation.
Was he naked?
In many cases, nudity was used extensively, and it worked well.
Why is nudity effective?
It is effective because a lot of people feel very vulnerable when they're nude. And also because of the culture, nudity is not something that is common.
Each step they took was specifically spelled out in the Justice Department memo. For instance, uncooperative detainees could be put in a small, dark, cramped confinement box with an insect in it. As for waterboarding, the interrogators were allowed to pour water for up to 40 seconds at a time, quote, applied from a height of 12 to 24 inches, using about a liter of water per session.
Oh, you had rules for each thing?
Yes, we had rules. And not only that, but every time we did any of this, we had to ask permission. The field had to ask permission of headquarters.
Each time?
Each time.
Each single time.
After Abu Zubaydah was subjected to the CIA's menu of interrogation techniques, Rodriguez says he became compliant in less than 3 weeks.
Was it waterboarding that broke the dam with Abu Zubaydah?
I think he was more taken aback by the insult slap.
Oh, what's the insult slap?
It's just slapping somebody with an open hand so that you don't hurt him.
By hurt, you mean you don't break his jaw.
We don't break his jaw, and the objective is not to inflict pain. That's not the objective. The objective is to let him know that there's a new sheriff in town, and that he better pay attention.
You also employed stress techniques.
Mm-hmm. There was a technique where the detainee would sit on the floor and would raise his hands over his head.
In other words, he had to hold his hands up there forever and ever, right?
Well, forever and ever. I was thinking about this the other day. The objective was to induce muscle fatigue that and most people who work out do a lot more fatiguing of
their
muscles.
Are you saying this was like going to the gym? Come on.
A little different.
Yeah. I mean,
because central to the interrogation was sleep deprivation. Abu Zubaydah was kept awake for 3 straight days.
Sleep deprivation works, and I'm sure, Leslie, with all the traveling that you do, that you have suffered from jet lag, and, when you don't get a good night's sleep for 2-3 days, it's very hard.
Now, you don't really mean to suggest that it's like jet lag. I mean, you make it sound like it's benign when you say stuff like that.
Well, I mean, the
and
feeling...
And going to the gym and jet lag.
Well, the feeling what? That you get when you don't sleep.
No, but, I mean, these were enhanced interrogation techniques. Other people call it torture. This wasn't benign in any sense of the word.
I'm not trying to say that they were benign. But the problem is here is that people don't understand that this program was not about hurting anybody. This program was about instilling a sense of hopelessness and despair on the terrorist, on the detainee, so that he would conclude on his own that he was better off cooperating with us.
He says once Abu Zubaydah became compliant, the harsh treatment stopped, and he became a fountain of information. But the FBI interrogators remember it differently.
In fact, what they say is everything important that he gave up to them before the harsher interrogation techniques kicked in.
Well, that is just not true. It is not true.
Well, now they say that. You say it's not true. What am I supposed to think? I don't know.
The FBI and CIA disagree, and it's impossible for us to resolve the argument because details of the interrogations remain classified. But what about the fact that detainees will say anything to stop the pain?
Here's something that was told to me. Abu Zubaydah's story sent the CIA around the globe. Not a single plot was foiled. We spent millions chasing phantoms.
Bull. He gave us a roadmap that allowed us to capture a bunch of Al-Qaeda senior leaders.
Among those leaders, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, details of his interrogation and what he told the CIA about Osama bin Laden next. The CIA had the use of a fleet of special aircraft to spirit detainees to its web of black sites across the globe. They were knocked out with sedatives during the flights, and upon arrival had their heads and beards shaved, and they were placed in sterile underground cells with only an arrow painted on the floor pointing to Mecca. In total, the CIA picked up about 100 detainees, subjected 75 of them to harsh interrogation techniques, 3 of them to waterboarding, including Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, or KSM, the mastermind of 9/11. When KSM was first captured in 2003, he was in no mood to talk.
Well, he was not going to talk. I mean, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed is one of the toughest killers out there.
I heard he was brilliant.
He was brilliant. He was scary smart. But he's also evil, and he will use that intelligence to find different ways of coming after us.
He says that in the beginning, KSM would respond to questions by reciting verses from the Quran.
He eventually told us, well, look, I will talk once I get to New York and I get my lawyer.
Oh,
he
my
knew
God.
That if he got into the criminal process in the U.S., that he would get a lawyer and he would use that forum.
He'd use it as a platform ideology.
He would use it as a platform.
Faced with KSM's obstinance, CIA interrogators began ratcheting up the severity of the questioning step by step.
Did you make him wear diapers?
Diapers, I don't recall specifically to him, but diapers is something that is approved.
So it's humiliating.
Standard, yeah.
According to an internal investigation by the CIA's own inspector general, this is a heavily redacted, declassified copy. KSM was denied sleep for 180 hours in a row, or about 7.5 days, and still he didn't break.
He was the toughest detainee that we had, no doubt.
So he was subjected to waterboarding, specifically 183 pourings of water in about half a dozen separate sessions. Rodriguez said the average pour lasted 10 seconds.
Can I say something about Khalid Sheikh Mohammed? He's the one that was responsible for the death of Danny Pearl, the Wall Street reporter. He slit his throat in front of the camera. I don't know what type of man it takes to cut the throat of someone in front of you like that, but I can tell you that this is an individual who probably didn't give a rat's ass about having water poured on his face.
He never believed for one second you were going to kill him.
No. And let me just tell you, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed would use his fingers to count the number of seconds because he knew that in all likelihood we would stop at 10. So this doesn't sound like a person who is afraid of dying.
If he's sitting there counting off, he knows you're not going to kill him, he knows he's not going to drown, then why do it? What's the point?
I think that the cumulative effect of waterboarding and sleep deprivation and everything else that was done eventually got to him.
So what happens? Does he break down? Does he weep? Does he fall apart?
No. He gets a good night's sleep. He gets his insurer. By the way, he was very heavy and when he came to us and he lost 50 pounds.
What, his insurer? You mean like people in the hospital who drink that stuff?
Yes. Dietary manipulation was part of these standard techniques.
So sleep deprivation, dietary manipulation, I mean, this is Orwellian stuff. The United States doesn't do that.
Well, we do.
The question is whether the information they got from KSM was truthful and helpful. In his report, the CIA's inspector general says that the CIA's Office of Medical Services concluded that when it came to the waterboarding,
there was no reason to think that it had been effective or that it was safe.
Well,
this is your own inspector general.
Well, our own inspector general, in many cases, did very sloppy work. That report is flawed in many different ways.
Why would they make it up?
I don't know if it's made up. I don't know if there were advocates. You know, the inspector general himself, he was opposed to this. I mean, but this was the policy. He was wrong.
But many of the tips from detainees reportedly led to blind alleys and expensive wild goose chases. Rodriguez maintains that the information from KSM and the other detainees enabled the CIA to disrupt at least 10 large-scale terrorist plots.
Would the plots have been stopped without the harsh interrogation techniques? In other words, could it have happened without waterboarding?
I can't answer that question, perhaps, but the issue here was timing. We needed information, and we needed it right away to protect the homeland.
You told us that the whole rationale, justification for the whole interrogation program was to stop an imminent attack. The inspector general says it didn't stop any imminent attack.
I submit to you that we don't know. We don't know if, for example, Al-Qaeda would have been able to continue on with their anthrax program or a nuclear program or the second wave of attacks or the sleeper agents that they had inside the United States that were working with Khalid Sheikh Mohammed to take down the Brooklyn Bridge, for example. So it's easy years later to say, well, you know, no ticking time bomb, nothing was stopped.
But the truth is about Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, you really didn't break him.
Why? Why are you saying
well,
that?
Well, he didn't tell you about Osama bin Laden. He didn't tell you how to get him. He didn't tell you how to find him.
some of these people were not going to tell us everything.
So you don't break them, and they told you lies.
There is a limit to what they will tell us.
Actually, KSM lied about the courier, whose identity finally led to the compound in Obadabad, Pakistan, where the terrorist leader he calls Sheikh bin Laden was hiding.
Now, here's what I had heard, that Khalid Sheikh Mohammed told you the courier had retired and threw you off the scent for a while.
That was the one secret he was going to take to the grave, and that was the protection of the Sheikh. He was not going to tell us.
One of the secrets Rodriguez had hoped to take to his grave was exposed in 2007. The CIA had videotaped the interrogation of two of its detainees, including Abu Zubaydah.
The reason why we taped Abu Zubaydah was because he was very wounded when he was captured, and we feared that he was going to die in captivity, so we wanted to show the world that we actually had nothing to do with his death, that he died on his own.
Well, that's ironic. You wanted to have a video record that he was being well-treated, but in the end, they became a video record that he'd been subjected to these harsh techniques.
Yeah, we weren't hiding anything.
But you then ordered these tapes destroyed.
Correct. 92 tapes.
92 tapes. Why did you order that they be destroyed?
To protect the people who worked for me and who were at those black sites and whose faces were shown on the tape.
Protect them from what?
Protect them from Al-Qaeda ever getting their hands on these tapes and using them to go after them and their families.
He was also worried about the very survival of the CIA's dark side, the clandestine service, because of the so-called Abu Ghraib effect.
I was concerned that the distinction between a legally authorized program, as our enhanced interrogation program was, and illegal activity by a bunch of psychopaths would not be made.
He says that CIA lawyers repeatedly asked the White House, Justice Department, and Vice President Cheney's office for permission to shred the tapes. But
nobody was making a decision to proceed.
So one day you just said, the hell with it. I have this authority. I'm going to do it.
One day I finally called in my advisors and lawyers and say, tell me again that this is legal. And tell me that I have the authority to do this. When the answer I received was yes and yes, then I said, well, I am going to make this decision and do it myself.
Boom, they were destroyed.
Yes.
They were destroyed in an industrial strength shredder.
Well, here's what you write in your book. You took the president's, the vice president's silence on this to mean they were really relieved that you had taken this on yourself and had done it. That's what you write.
Correct.
There are people who feel that you did it as a cover-up.
Everything that was on those tapes were authorized activities by the U.S. government. So there was nothing to cover up.
Yet after the story broke in the newspapers, the Justice Department launched a criminal investigation. Ultimately, Rodriguez was cleared of any criminal wrongdoing. By then, the CIA's Inspector General's report was partly declassified, detailing some of the program's excesses.
Mock executions? People threatened with power drills?
Yes.
People told that you were going to go and hurt their children, rape their wives?
Stupid things that were done by people who had no authority to do that.
And they just took it on themselves?
Correct. And we found out about it. And we self-reported and actually called in the IG and said, you better take a look at what these people did and do what you need to do.
You have some people out there who were taken to black sites. They were subjected to terrible treatment. They hadn't done anything. I mean, they were taken mistakenly. They disappeared. What about them?
No doubt when you are involved in complicated covert action programs like this one, that some mistakes will be made.
Rodriguez retired from the CIA in January 2008. He has spent the last year writing his book, published by the CBS company Simon & Schuster. In the book, he says that by canceling the interrogation program, President Obama has tied the government's hands in the war on terror.
There we go. We don't capture anybody anymore, Leslie. I mean, you know, their default option of this administration has been to kill all prisoners, take no prisoners.
The drones.
The drones. How can it be more ethical to kill people rather than capture them? I've never understood that one.
President Obama has said that what we did was torture.
Well, President Obama is entitled to his opinion. When President Obama condemns the covert action activities of a previous government, he is breaking the covenant that exists between intelligence officers who are at the pointy end of the spear hanging way out there and the government that authorized them and directed them to go there.
John McCain, huge critic of this program. He had been tortured, so we know where he's coming from. Here's what he said. It's killing us that America will sink to the level of its worst enemies. We forfeited our values, he said. And I guess what I want to ask is, didn't it actually change who we are, what we think we're about? I mean, we think we're the country that doesn't do that, right?
I am very secure in what we did, and I am very confident that what we did saved America.